Every Friday on Prime Video.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up, we're going to open up the phone lines, take some phone calls. We'll also talk about a big issue, infrastructure, the U.S. infrastructure. It's a topic that we haven't talked a lot about as we've been obsessed about other things here in the country. And first, I would just want to say thanks to everybody that contributed last week during the fall fundraising drive. We raised more than $217,000 in 7 days. And thanks to you if you contributed to public affairs, especially if you like Democracy Now! And the 10 a.m. shows and Radioactivity on at 11 o'clock and Midpoint. If you like those shows, we hope that you'll contribute. Help us reach the last $16,000 or $17,000 that we need to reach. You can make your contribution online at WMNF.org. It sends a big message when you make a contribution during News and Public Affairs, because it says that this really labor-intensive part of the day here at WMNF is worth it to you. So again, you can make a contribution to WMNF. Help us reach our final goal of $235,000. Just go to WMNF.org. Well, let's listen to one listener comment that came in after yesterday's program. Yesterday, after the discussion about the rise of fascism, we heard a comment from a listener who said that the Trump University scandal was a nothing burger. Here's what one listener had to say after that.
Hi, Rob. This is Dave in Tampa. I caught the tail end of your show Thursday morning, and heard that somebody had written in to say that the Trump University thing was a big nothing burger. Just to remind everyone, that nothing burger was a $25 million settlement Trump settled with the plaintiffs just before being inaugurated. And that number included a $2 million fine levied by the state of New York. So if that's a nothing burger, man, I don't know. That's, to me, that seems pretty significant. And I think it's just part of Donald Trump's overall character. You know, you have the same sort of thing happening with his name downtown Tampa when they were going to build Trump Tower, and that resulted in a massive fraud as well. So nothing burger, I don't think so. Thanks a lot.
There's a listener comment that came in after yesterday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Well, there's a lot of important issues out there, and we could talk about many of them. One of the issues that doesn't get discussed enough is what's happening to America's infrastructure. As we spend more and more money on the military and less on domestic needs, things are beginning to fall apart. One of the things that we should look at is water. This week marked the fourth annual Imagine a Day Without Water Day. And earlier this week, I spoke with Kip Peterson, who is part of a campaign called the Value of Water Campaign. It's a coalition of nonprofits and for-profits that want to talk about the state of the U.S. infrastructure when it comes to water. And if we met all the infrastructure needs for water, we could put nearly 2 million people to work. Let's listen to an interview that I did with Kip Peterson, the Director of Public Affairs of the Value of Water Campaign, about the state of America's water infrastructure. Kip Peterson, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So how endangered is our nation's water infrastructure?
You know, our water infrastructure across the country, it's old. It's failing in some places. You know, a water main breaks in some city in the United States every 2 minutes. But, you know, unfortunately, most people don't realize it because water infrastructure is mostly out of sight, out of mind. You know, you see that pothole on the street or you notice that rusty bridge, but you don't necessarily ever see or think about the pipes underneath your feet that in some cases are crumbling.
I know we've got that problem here in the Tampa Bay area, especially in the city of Tampa. Every week, it seems, a new water main is breaking. Why are they breaking? How old are these water mains?
Well, it depends on the part of the country, but, you know, in a lot of cities, this infrastructure was put in the ground in the early 1900s. Water pipe, you know, it basically, a lot of it has a lifespan of about 100 years. So a lot of it has served, you know, a great useful life, but it's just at the end of that life cycle. You know, in some cities, like Washington, D.C., for example, there's still pipes in the ground that were put in place during the Civil War. So just like any homeowner knows, the longer you go putting off just routine deferred maintenance, the more expensive that bill becomes to ultimately fix that problem.
So every city in the country that's at least 100 years old, and I guess most cities are, they're going to have this trouble.
Oh, absolutely. Whether you're on the West Coast, the East Coast, the Midwest, you know, we see examples of failing and old infrastructure just all across the country. Like every city in the country seems to share that same issue.
Is there a national plan to say, hey, look, we've got X amount of dollars we've got to spend on upgrading our water infrastructure? Does anybody have a plan or an idea of what it would cost?
Yeah, there are folks that have an idea of the cost, and it's expensive. Experts say that due to the decades of underinvestment, that price tag now stands at about $82 billion to fix our nation's water infrastructure. You know, 30 years ago, the federal government provided about 63% of capital spending on water infrastructure. Now it's just about 9%. So that disinvestment has really climbed over time, and the burden has shifted from the feds to local ratepayers. And so, you know, local customers are seeing that hit them each month with an ever-increasing monthly water bill.
So why is the Fed portion of paying for the infrastructure, why is it declined?
You know, it's just water is not, for whatever reason, has not been a priority. But, you know, the current administration and Congress, you know, both have talked about infrastructure and that rebuilding infrastructure like roads and bridges is a key priority. But unfortunately, water just hasn't been a part of that conversation. We've done quite a bit of polling of voters over the last couple of years, and 80% of American voters think it's important to invest in water infrastructure. So somehow we need to move, you know, that political talk to political action.
So I've renovated two old houses here in the Tampa area. Both were about 100 years old, and they had lead solder in the pipes. And, you know, when the plumber came in and saw it, he said, oh, you got to get rid of that stuff. I'm wondering, with the lead problems that we've seen in places like Flint, Michigan, is lead still in the pipes in our infrastructure and in our general water delivery system around the country?
You know, it just depends on the city. You know, some cities do have lead, and a lot of times it's on the, as you described, it's on the private homeowner side. Maybe it's not out in the street, but it could be internally, especially in those older homes. And we do see that in different cities, you know, of to different degrees across the country, just depending on what part of the country you're in. But it's something that I know water utilities around the country are aggressively tackling, and a number of water utilities have plans to, you know, assist homeowners with the removal of those old pipes.
Now, you're part of a campaign called Imagine a Day Without Water. Who's behind the campaign?
The Value of Water campaign is sponsoring, this is the fourth annual Imagine a Day Without Water. And really, it's all based on the fact that, you know, we as Americans often take water for granted. You know, we turn on the tap and clean water comes out, or we flush the toilet and dirty water goes away, but we don't really think about the vital water infrastructure that makes all of that possible, the pipes, the pump stations, et cetera. So that's why we host Imagine a Day Without Water. We want to remind Americans that clean water is, you know, an important part of almost every aspect of their daily lives. So think about this morning when you woke up, you know, you got out of bed, brushed your teeth, used the toilet, took a shower, maybe made some coffee. You know, maybe when you got home last night, you had a beer. All that's made possible through water. And so, again, we just want to remind folks that you really can't go on throughout your day unless you have access to water.
Is there a bill in Congress that would approve an $82 billion water infrastructure package?
Unfortunately, there's not. And so, you know, this is, you know, this year, Imagine a Day Without Water being today, it's a perfect time to raise this issue because Election Day is right around the corner. It's next month. It's November 6th. You know, it's important for folks to ask candidates for office, you know, hey, is water a priority? If not, why isn't it? You know, what are you going to do if elected to ensure that we have a reliable source of water, not only for today, but for future generations.
Just getting back to that question of who's behind this, are you representing local public utilities? Are you representing private companies? Who do you represent as part of this campaign?
Well, the Value Water Campaign is made up of all sorts of different water associations throughout the country, water utilities, you know, private companies that operate in the water sector as well, whether it be engineering firms or nonprofits. There are over 1,000 organizations across the country, you know, from local distilleries to breweries to zoos to utilities who have all signed up to participate in Imagine a Day Without Water.
How would you rate the U.S. infrastructure versus the infrastructure of other countries? I don't know if you've looked at this, but if you look at a country like Canada or look at a country like France or some of the Scandinavian countries or England, are we ahead of them when it comes to taking care of our infrastructure? Are we behind them? Have you looked at that?
You know, the big national groups, the national engineering firms and associations have graded American infrastructure at a D, maybe at the best, oftentimes an F. So I know that American infrastructure, there's no question that it is in dire need of investment.
So if somebody were to go to your website, let's say somebody here from here in Florida who's listening in the Tampa Bay area or around Florida, could they find out how much Florida needs to invest in its infrastructure, in its water infrastructure?
You know, the first thing they should do, you know, especially if they're on Twitter, is check out the hashtag ValueWater. And you've got all sorts of organizations, including quite a few in Florida, who are participating in today's Imagine Day Without Water. And you'll find resources to, you know, activities that are taking place, to also just resources about, you know, what the need is as well. And also encourage folks to visit the website imagineadaywithoutwater.org for some additional resources.
So, final question, whose responsibility is it? You talked about $82 billion nationwide in terms of being behind in our water infrastructure. Should it be up to the federal government to fund it? Should it be up to state government? Should it be up to local government? That's where all these, you know, water pipelines are. Make the case for us. Who should be funding it?
I mean, it's $82 billion. It's such a big price tag that I don't think any one sector can do it alone. It's got to be a team effort with the feds, the states, the local units, all pulling in the same direction. You know, unfortunately, right now, it's only the local taxpayers primarily who are footing the bill. You know, we would hope that the federal government would step up and provide some sort of assistance, whether it be for infrastructure investment or billing assistance or whatnot. You know, the federal government provides assistance for, you know, for folks to pay their heating bills, but there's no such assistance for water bills. So it's going to be a team effort with all three units of government, federal, state, local, all pulling in the same direction to ultimately accomplish that goal.
What happens if we ignore the problem or put it off for another few years?
Well, it's just going to get worse. And those examples of, you know, cities getting shut down due to boil water advisories are going to only become more prevalent. In July, part of the city of Washington, D.C. was shut down because of a boil water due to a main break. We see that more and more across the country. And the worse it gets, you know, it could become a public health issue. I mean, you know, think about it. If we don't have water, you know, a city will have to shut down hospitals, schools, restaurants, whatnot. And so it's, you know, imagining a day without water, it's not something pretty to think about.
So we're already seeing examples of where wholesale problems are arising because of the age of our infrastructure, or water infrastructure.
Oh, no question. Every city across the country, there's a similar story about a boil water advisory or water main breaks. And so I think if we don't invest, we're just going to see those headlines more frequently.
Kip, is there anything else you want to add?
No, again, I would just remind folks to just take a moment today and think about everything they do and if they could do it with water or without water, and take a minute, you know, and check out the hashtag ValueWater and check out some of the organizations around the country who are shedding a light on the valuable role that water plays in our daily lives.
Kip Peterson of the Value of Water Campaign, thanks for coming on WMNF.
Hey, thanks so much.
That was Kip Peterson, the Public Affairs Director of the U.S. Water Alliance and the Value of Water Campaign, talking about the importance of investing in our nation's water infrastructure. And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to open up the phone lines and talk about items in the news. We could talk about water. We want to thank Scott Peterson from St. Petersburg, who walked in a pledge donation for WMNF. He's a big fan of the Saturday night house party. Scott, thanks for that nice contribution. That helps us close the gap. I think the gap is still about $16,000 from the fund drive that just ended on Thursday, ended yesterday. You can make your contribution online. You can go to WMNF.org and make a contribution. And thank you. If you've made a contribution to WMNF this year, that's great. And helps us stay on the air. Well, I'm going to open up the phone lines and take some phone calls and see what's on your mind. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can also send in an email comment to dj@wmnf.org. Figure that we talk about some of the items in the news. Maybe pick up a little bit on what Summer was talking about the last hour. Here are some of the stories I think we could talk about. The Tampa Bay Times is reporting that the red tide algae bloom that was floating offshore in recent weeks has returned to Pinellas County. Apparently, gusts of wind spun off from Hurricane Michael pushed it back close to Florida's Gulf Coast. Johns Pass, Madeira Beach, Reddington Shores, and Indian Rock Shores all had high concentrations of the algae when tested this week. Normally, a red tide bloom begins in the late summer or early fall and lasts through the winter until February or March when it dissipates on its own. But the current bloom, which was first detected nearly a year ago, has lasted so long and become so deadly for marine life that scientists have called it the worst in a decade. At least 12 deaths have been blamed on Hurricane Michael, the most powerful hurricane to hit the continental U.S. in more than 50 years. A total of 900,000 homes and businesses in North Florida, Alabama, Georgia, and the Carolinas are without power this morning in the wake of Hurricane Michael. The ground zero for the hit, Mexico Beach and Panama City. Row after row of beachfront homes were obliterated by Michael's surging seas and howling winds so that only slabs of concrete in the sand remain. Well, China's trade surplus with the U.S. widened to a record $34.1 billion in September as exports to the U.S. market rose by 13% over a year ago as President Trump began a tariff battle. So China apparently winning the trade war. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Yesterday, the Pentagon ordered a temporary pause in all F-35 fighter jet flights in order to inspect the fleet in the wake of a crash last month in South Carolina. The decision involves a potentially bad fuel tube and affects more than 250 U.S.-owned jets and about 100 that belong to other nations, including Britain. A Marine F-35 crashed in an uninhabited marsh island near the Grays Hill community in South Carolina at the end of September. The Marine pilot safely ejected before the crash. The Marine version of the F-35 cost at least $250 million. And while other mainstream political parties in Germany flounder in polls and struggle to answer a far-right challenge, the Green Party has gained strength in Germany as a magnet for liberal-minded voters. Green Party offering a compassionate approach to migration, a pro-European Union stance, and an emphasis on fighting climate change and protecting biodiversity. The Green Party appears poised for an unprecedented second-place finish in traditionally conservative Bavaria in a state election on Sunday. Nationally, some recent polls have shown that the Greens level with the Social Democratic Party, traditionally Germany's main center-left party. So the Greens doing well there in Germany, perhaps. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Well, President Trump, when he was first in office, soaked up the grandeur of Saudi Arabia on his very first foreign stop as president last year. And he envisioned a huge benefit for the U.S. in building closer ties with Saudi Arabia. Ties were already very close even before President Trump went to that country. Now, White House relations with Saudi Arabia are imperiled over the mysterious disappearance and possible murder of a Saudi columnist for the Washington Post who vanished after walking into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, to get documents for his upcoming marriage. The kingdom says Turkey's claim that Jamal Khashoggi was killed by a Saudi hit squad is baseless. But if Saudi Arabia is found to be complicit in his disappearance, the U.S.-Saudi relationship could be upended. There are new calls in Congress for the U.S. to halt those massive arms sales to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is currently fighting a war in Yemen where millions of people face starvation because of the war. The U.S. is backing Saudi Arabia in that war in Yemen. President Trump says he wants to know what happened to Khashoggi, but not at the expense of Saudi Arabia's deal to buy American military hardware.
We don't like it, and we don't like it even a little bit. But as to whether or not we should stop $110 billion from being spent in this country, knowing they have four or five alternatives, two very good alternatives, that would not be acceptable to me.
Meantime, Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, says President Trump's response to the suspected murder has been inadequate.
It's insufficient. This is an extraordinary case of a U.S. resident being kidnapped and likely murdered by a U.S. ally. President Trump's unwillingness to set out any consequences or even a threat of consequences essentially tells the Saudis that we're okay with this kind of conduct and behavior.
As you heard on Summer's True Talk show in the last hour, it really does send shockwaves through the community that he is critical of Saudi Arabia. Many people who no longer live in Saudi Arabia now very fearful that President Trump won't back their dissident actions. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. And let's go to Mike in Bradenton. Hey, Mike, you're on WMNF on Radioactivity. What would you like to comment about?
Well, my understanding is that lead that's in pipes in a house only leaches lead for a short period of time. So if your pipes are really old in your house, they're not giving out lead anymore into the water. They're not leaching lead into the water after like a couple of years. I don't know exactly how long it takes, but it's not very long that the pipes are safe. The lead stays at bay after a while.
That might be true. You know, my pipes were so old and they were made of cast iron that they were rusting. And so I had all my old pipes taken out. You know, one of my houses was built in, my second house is built in 1921. And my first house, I think it goes back to 1917. So we just, you know, I mean, we took the pipes out because there was lead solder. We didn't want to have any question that the water was safe for us and the kids. So
yeah,
so that's what
I understand. I would do the same thing, but I did hear that, and I just wanted to bring that out to the open.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, and again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Rex in St. Pete. Rex, you're on WMNF. What would you like to talk about?
Good morning, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. Just overall, listening to the headline news that you just delivered, listening to the gentleman talking about our infrastructure, I really think it comes down to us as a nation on, do we believe in more of a socialistic style of government or a capitalistic style of government? For the last 40, 50 years, we've been very capitalistic. And being capitalistic, you know, it devours itself. It takes everything that it possibly can, including infrastructure. And once it's depleted, it moves on to the next country to do it to them. You know, it's just the nature of capitalism, where socialistic would prefer, instead of buying a million, well, the aircraft that you were just saying, the $750 million aircraft, they would rather put $3.25 billion into, say, water.
Yeah, just think about that. The aircraft, that aircraft that crashed in South Carolina, was the cost of it is $250 million, and we have
a quarter of a billion.
We have 250 of these aircraft, and the problem with these aircraft is they don't do well in lightning storms, and
they don't fly.
They don't fly, and so they're not very operable. And it is the most expensive military project in U.S. history. And nobody wants to come out to say it was a boondoggle. It was overpriced because the initial price wasn't a quarter of $1 billion per airplane. And it is just a tremendous screw-up that nobody talks about. I mean, just like nobody talks about water infrastructure in that we need $82 billion. But if you were to take all that money that we spent on those airplanes and spend it on infrastructure, people would be healthier, more people would have jobs, we would have a better economy. You know, when a plane crashes, when that plane crashes in South Carolina, you have nothing.
Cheech and Chong would say it was up in smoke.
That's right. You have nothing. You've spent the money, but you didn't make a better world. You didn't. You know that plane didn't do anything to protect us from terrorists or anything like that. It just blew up, and that's it. Say goodbye. You just burned up a quarter of $1 billion.
Yeah, you know it's insanity, is what it is. You know, I've been accused of. I mean, I own my own company. I own a business, and people go to me all the time. Well, how can you be a democratic socialist, if you own a business? And it's really pretty simple. My employees make good money. They're productive members of society. I feel good about what I do. There is some capitalism. I mean, either side of the coin, anything unbridled is dangerous. So there's the problem we always have is everything swings far left, everything swings far right. We never hit that sweet point like a golf swing regularly. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that elusive sweet spot. I know what you're talking about exactly. I have that problem on weekends. I can't hit the sweet spot.
Yeah, that's the way our countries run. I think Mr. Wolf on Tuesday mornings describes it every week so admirably.
but couldn't you say that you, as a small business person, or restaurant owners, or cookie makers, or you know people that make cars, maybe that's where capitalism belongs. But maybe capitalism doesn't belong when it comes to healthcare or education. I mean, maybe there's some things that. You know, a private restaurant, I'm not sure I want the government running a restaurant, but I am sure that I don't want the insurance companies, the for-profit insurance companies, to run our healthcare system.
Well, exactly. There's my industry. I have a property management company, and my industry is now in the big eyes. What wasn't known 15 years ago is now known by Wall Street that our margins are great. Our business models are excellent. And so now a friend of mine who had, you know, 8 years ago, 60, 70 properties has now expanded and become a huge conglomerate of over 6,000 units. And they're going to get bigger. And then it's, I don't know how to explain it, but mom and pops are slowly dying. And no matter what industry, sooner or later, you have to conglomerate and venture capital with everybody in your industry. Otherwise, you end up being a dinosaur.
Yeah. You know, I remember.
It's a shame.
I remember reading a story in the Tampa Bay Times as we were coming out of the recession during the Obama years, when housing prices were still low here in the Tampa Bay area. And I think it was the Blackstone Group or one of those big Wall Street groups was buying up distressed housing here in the Tampa Bay area and then renting it back to low-income people who had been forced out of their house because of the mortgage crisis. And so they sweep in. Go ahead.
What Blackstone is actually doing now is creating companies that if the properties that they bought for cash aren't doing well in their portfolio, they're refinancing them. And guaranteed if those properties don't meet their expectations, they'll just bankrupt that company.
Yeah.
They got their money back. They don't care.
Yeah.
But Blackstone right now across the United States, the last count was close to 45,000 units.
Well, that's shocking. you know, that they would buy up these distressed houses and then rent them back to people that are you know, trying to find their way back after the mortgage crisis. Rex, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right, so there you have Rex's thoughts. What do you think? 813-239-9663. I want to thank Anonymous, who just made a $300 contribution to Radioactivity. Thank you very much. They also like sustainable living and alternative health and Democracy Now. Thank you for that. You can help us close the gap on the fund drive that ended yesterday. You can help us close that $16,000 gap by making a contribution online. Go to WIMNF.org. Simon's suggestion about what to do about government spending, he said, let's stop space exploration. What do you think? Should we stop space exploration? It's not as expensive as the U.S. military. Ahmed writes this. He said that there is a major candidates forum Saturday, October 13th. This takes place at the Islamic Society of Tampa Bay at 7326 East Sly Avenue in Tampa. It goes from 2 p.m. to the late part of the afternoon. And United Voices of America, the Islamic Society of Tampa Bay, are hosting one of the largest election candidates forums in the region and the state. And again, it takes place tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And so far, 25 candidates are confirmed to speak, and 400 people of members of the public are expected to attend. Among the confirmed list of candidates, Kristen Carlson, Deborah Belanti, Angela Birdsong, James Chambers, Chad Cronister, Victor Crist, Janet Cruz, Sherry Donahue, and Fentrice Driscoll. So that's a part of the group of people that will be there tomorrow at the Candidates Forum. Let's take some more phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, Rob. You know, it gives me a kick when I hear Trump saying that at his rallies about the left-wing angry mob, and then how you know they're just a disgrace and no decency. What I think about Donald Trump talking about decency, that really makes me really cracks me up. I'm sure a lot of people crack up about that. You know, here's the thing about it is that he's just using the same tactics as Nixon did when he first got in. Remember, he started with the law and order. He's going to be the law and order president. Oh, how original, Donald. And then, you know, and now with the same tactics of calling them thugs and calling this, that's what he's going to do. And by the way, you know that the last two rallies have not been televised by Fox?
Yeah, Fox is no longer carrying President Trump wall-to-wall when he makes a speech because they found that the ratings are declining.
Exactly. And so he sits there and so, you know, I want to ask you a question. How do you think Trump would have been as president back in the turmoil of the Vietnam War? In other words, if Trump would have been the president in 68, 69, 70, and faced with the protesters of that time and that situation, it's an interesting question because I think about it all the time. In my opinion, I think it would have been, he would have been all about the war. There would have been a Fox News at that time. They would have been defending the war. You know, Laura Ingraham and all these people defending the war and every day. And, you know what I think, Mom? I think he probably would have ordered them to be beaten on the head. I think he would have ordered them to open up. To open up on him. Okay, that's my opinion. That's how despicable I think this man is. He will do anything to keep his narcissistic power and his power and his ego in check. And that, believe me, he's worried. He is worried about these midterms because the other day he was telling his friends at Fox, he says, well, you know, even if we lose, you know, I mean, you know, we the Dems, they're like infrastructure. Already, you know, he's already gearing up to maybe, and he thinks that this, and then the women alone who are, in my opinion, are going to sway this midterm. I hope to God that they do. So, you know, I just think it's really he's so transparent. The language that he's using now, Rob, is all projection. All that was said about him, as Roy Cohn taught him, you go back and just you give it back to them twofold. So his and here's the thing that really gets me, and I'll let you go to this. His supporters think that he is a tough guy, that he, you know, he's that alpha male. And in my opinion, I agree with Al Sharpton. He's a bully. He's a coward, and what you do to the bully is you call him out at noontime, and most of the time he won't show up. and you've got to stand up to that bully.
All right, Danny.
That's my preaching for the day.
All right, Danny. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you.
All right, good to hear from you. All right, so if you want to agree or disagree with Danny, you can do that. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. This idea that somehow mobs are attacking Republicans and President Trump, I think goes back to the last week and the last 2 weeks as the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings were going on, and there was a big debate in the country about whether Brett Kavanaugh should be appointed to the Supreme Court. And many women ended up going to Washington, D.C. to try to tell their personal stories about sexual attacks and sexual violence to U.S. senators. So they would stand up during the hearings and shout, and they would confront senators who were going to vote for Kavanaugh or leaning toward voting for Kavanaugh, and they would tell their personal stories. Now, sometimes there was some emotion. Sometimes there was shouting. Sometimes there was anger, I think. Senators would be confronted in the hallway. But I'm, you know, wondering, you know, given all that we've seen over the past few years, I mean, you weren't born yesterday. I wasn't born yesterday. I can remember when there were actual mobs trying to disrupt things. I was at an event hosted by Kathy Castor, the congressperson from Tampa, and she was on Palm Avenue at the Children's Board office in about 2010, I think it was, 2009, somewhere there. And she was discussing Obamacare. She was discussing health care. And a mob of people who were associated with the Tea Party and the Republican Party were trying to disrupt the event. And they were all angry. I mean, they, you know, at the time, they were saying Obamacare was a total government takeover of health care, that people would no longer have choices, that there would be death panels, that children would be executed or left to die. They said all sorts of amazing things about Obamacare. None of it turned out to be true. Obamacare has been in force for a long time, and I have yet to hear about a death panel. But you can remember, I mean, if you remember, if you go back to the Tea Party days, or even if you go back to some of the Trump rallies where people would hold up signs or shout something about President Trump from one of his rallies, and they would get beat up, and President Trump would cheer on the people that were beating up the protesters inside the Trump rally. I mean, when we think about mobs, when we think about angry mobs, who has the lock on that? I mean, there may be problems on both sides, but I think that women do have the right to talk about what's happened to them and to confront senators. Senators are so elusive. They don't show up in public that often. And when an important vote comes up, shouldn't women have the right to talk to senators in the hallway? Let's just go back and listen to what the Tea Party sounded like circa 2009. This is from Washington, D.C. This is one of the videos that was taken back during the Tea Party days.
USA! USA! USA!
And, you know, people were surrounding and confronting people in Washington, D.C., surrounding congressmen and all that. I mean, there were the New York Times has this history of kind of the mob violence during the Trump campaign, and their video is quite interesting. Let's see if I can pull it up and play a little bit of that back for you. I was at the Trump rally just a few weeks ago in Tampa, and I was in the reporters section in that area where all the reporters are forced to go. They ask the reporters to go into the section in the middle of the room. And I was there when a group of angry people were shouting at one of the CNN reporters, and the shouting went on for 5 or 10 minutes. No, there was no violence, but certainly was angry. Certainly there were, the F word was thrown around a lot. And I think the reporters were a little bit concerned. The security guards moved in and tried to separate some of the more angry people from the crowd, from the mob that was in the Trump rally, from the reporters. But for President Trump to complain and for the Republicans to complain about mob rule, I think that they should maybe kind of look at their own history. Look at the Tea Party. Look at what happened at the Kathy Castor healthcare event in Tampa. Look at what happened at the Trump rally in Tampa, where reporters were just screamed at by many people in the audience. Neither side, I think, is perfect. But I think that, we got to be careful. And if President Trump doesn't like mobs, then maybe he should talk to his own supporters who are screaming at reporters. And we're screaming at people that said that Obamacare was going to usher in death panels. It turned out not to be true. Well, again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. We're going to listen to a little bit of a Tea Party event at the Arizona State Capitol in 2013. Let's listen to what happened when the Tea Party rallied on the Arizona State Capitol steps, where there was an angry mob. Let's see if we can pull this up here.
Number four, we will secure our borders.
Push me again,
we will not have any more illegal aliens coming across.
To the sidewalk.
Hey, like I said,
number five,
working here, get them.
It will generate.
Get them. I'm not leaving.
1 million new taxpayers.
I'm not leaving.
You're not welcome. You're not welcome.
I kind of tend to disagree with Washington.
Nobody invited me.
Senate bill.
You can look up. You can find it all over the internet. What happened during the Tea Party held rallies? In the 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012. And you can look up what happened at the Trump rally this year in Tampa at the Florida State Fairgrounds. Let's take some more phone numbers. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Gina writes this: the only mob that existed is the one that President Trump instigated to physically attack people protesting Trump's rallies. The protesters chanting and carrying signs were exercising their First Amendment rights. Be aware, this is the Trump method of misinformation. And 813 unsigned says that the Trump supporters are as thin-skinned as their orange con man. Let's hear from some more people. Let's go to the phones, 813-239-9663. Let's go to, we can go to Terry in Tampa. Terry, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm feeling okay. I would have hoped that the drive would have been a little bit more successful. I put my little, what I could in, and I haven't paid it off yet, but the first of the month when I pay my bills, I'm going to put my $100 because I believe in freedom of speech. And as a person who served in the military, I hold that to be one of our virtues, is we have places where the citizenry can express themselves without fear of disappearing into a consulate or some dark building with no windows. And hello?
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm listening.
I just would hope, Rob, that more people would take it as serious as it is, the condition of our country, where the very fact that people who are telling the truth are being singled out for death or intimidation. And it's not something new. Journalists have always been under assault. And so, therefore, I consider it an honor to be able to put my little small amount towards making this station to continue as it is.
And Terry, when you were in the military, what did you understand free speech meant?
In the military, you don't have free speech.
Yeah, I know that, but when you're ostensibly in the military defending free speech.
You don't have free speech in the military, Bob.
Yeah, all right. That's really not my question, but I wonder what were you told you were defending?
Free speech.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, Terry. I'm just wondering, if you're in the military, when you're told you're defending free speech, what are you defending? 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And we're going to go back to the phones, and let's listen to Ann in Gulfport. Hi, Ann. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Well, I think that there's another mob that's coming along if we lose pre-existing conditions coverage. Me and several million others won't have any reason not to do whatever we want. We can take things into our own hands. We can move forward. We will be able to do things about people who are against our coverage because we will have absolutely nothing to lose.
So is that the number one issue for you during this election?
Yes, because I've got four-stage cancer.
Oh, boy.
And I'd be dead in 2 months without the chemo I'm on.
And are you on Medicare or are you being helped by Obamacare?
I'm helped by Obamacare.
Yeah, yeah. And what would happen if there's a total repeal of Obamacare?
I'd be dead because nobody will insure me.
Yeah, all right.
You know, and I would pay several thousand a month just to keep coverage. You know, as it is, I spend like $1,200 for the level of coverage I've got. But so many of us will have nothing to lose. I don't think they're taking us into account.
Okay. All right. Well, Ann, thank you. Thank you.
And thank you for yet another interesting program.
Okay. Thanks, Ann.
Bye-bye.
Good luck. Best of luck. Let's go to Hugh in Tampa. Hugh, you're on WMNF.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. I was just calling about the Saudi prince. I don't know if anybody else saw a recent TV show where a lot of Americans have gone over to Saudi Arabia, and they get free education. They've started their own businesses. They're living really, really nice lives over there. And, you know, these are young kids. And so I understand, you know, that the Saudi prince right now is, you know, under scrutiny because of what happened to Jamil or the journalist. But, I mean, until we get the whole story, you know, I'm reluctant to have an opinion right now, and I'm hoping for the better. You know, that the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia stays strong. And because I remember being in Kuwait when the Turkish government said, you know, you get your Chinook helicopters out of here. We don't want you here. And we were fighting for our lives. So, you know, I'm more skeptical of the Turkish government than I am of the Saudis. And I just hope that it turns out to be a more positive story.
And Hugh, how would you describe Saudi Arabia's human rights record from your perspective?
Well, from what I've seen about, you know, them allowing Americans to come over there and start their own businesses, the Saudi prince, he has a symbol that people recognize over there where you have your pinky finger sticking up and your index finger and your thumb make the shape of an L, which for people that are deaf know means I love you. And so, and when you make that symbol, they say out loud, with your privilege, create opportunity. And that's what the prince is known for over there, is that at least for his own people and for people that want to live in his country, that's their motto. And so from my perspective, I think that, you know, it's probably a great place for people to live or to want to start their own business. But again, you have to remember that if any of this story is true, that there are people, you know, that are going to protect the prince and not let anyone trash talk him, like we trash talk in America, you know, it's a second language over here. So we take it for granted. But really over there, it's something that you might want to consider, you know, before you say anything about, you know, someone who might be a member of who definitely is a member of the royal family.
So people have
it is over here.
So people have no human rights in Saudi Arabia because they can't speak out against the prince. Let me ask you this: there's a guardianship program in Saudi Arabia where every woman has to have like a male master, and the male can okay what a woman does and doesn't do, where she goes and where she doesn't go. Wouldn't you say that is? That's completely lacking in human rights because if women don't have equal rights, they're not fully human in Saudi Arabia.
Thousands of years.
What's that?
I may be incorrect in this, but from what I've been told, a lot of those laws are, you know, they date back 1,000 years, and women were to hide their face to prevent their beauty from being shown, so that men would not be so attracted to them that they couldn't control their urges. and, you know, would have sex with them. So, and
but,
so.
But do you think that that's, you know, here we are, it's not the 1100s, this is 2018. Should women be treated that way? Should women be second class? Do you agree with Saudi Arabia treating women as second class?
Well, I see your perspective, because I'm not sure that you're a father in Saudi Arabia. But if you're a father in Saudi Arabia and somebody is appointed to look over what you would consider a bodyguard, what I would consider a bodyguard, and what you would consider is, you know, an enslaver, but someone that is there to protect the virtues of your child, then I don't think you would look at it as negatively as what you're portraying it to be.
And what if the woman wanted to go to, you know, boxing class, or what if she wanted to drive, or what if she wanted to leave Saudi Arabia and take a vacation in Thailand? The male figure would have to okay it, right?
But you can't change a society of people that have been doing something for thousands of years. You just can't expect them to change overnight.
All right. Hugh, thanks a lot. What do you think? Is Hugh right? 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to read some of these emails that have come in. Charles in Tampa says the pattern that emerged a long time ago with conservatives is one of mechanisms that fascists use to forward their agenda, project what you're doing onto your perceived adversary, and pretend that reality is the exact opposite of what it actually is, writes Charles. Thank you, Charles. And here's an email unsigned that says, Rob, you're a quivering coward. So, all right, not sure what that's referring to, but thank you for that. And 727 writes, the military supports Lockheed Martin. Thank you. That going back to the cost of the F-35. John in Arcadia is making a contribution of $35 to WMNF. John, thanks for that nice contribution. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Kevin writes this. Since the Saudi Arabians are buying our weapons, it frees them from any responsibility regarding human rights. It's business as usual. One of the odd things that happened yesterday, too, was that Kanye West visited President Trump. Kanye pretty taken with President Trump. And some people still are shaking their heads at what happened. Let's listen to a report from Warren Levinson.
The president's invitation to Kanye West yielded a 20-minute monologue in which the rapper lighted briefly, like a pigeon hopping across a hot pavement in August, on subjects ranging from education to prison reform to the 13th Amendment.
There's a lot of things affecting our mental health that makes us do crazy things that puts us back into that trap door called the 13th Amendment. I did say abolish with the hat on, because why would you keep something around that's a trap door?
To industrial policy, to violence in Chicago, to the ephemeral notion of time, to Kanye's suggestion for presidential transportation.
This right here is the iPlane 1. It's a hydrogen-powered airplane, and this is what our president should be flying in. Look at this jersey.
West wore a red Make America Great Again hat to the meeting, which he said makes him feel like Superman, though he added, since time doesn't actually exist, the again part isn't really necessary. I'm Warren Levinson.
All right, a little report about a Kanye West visit to President Trump yesterday at the White House. It was extremely odd, wasn't it? We could talk about that. Daniel in Largo. Daniel, thanks for that nice $88.50 donation to WMNF, taking the WMNF t-shirt. Daniel Koval in Largo, thanks for helping us stay on the air. I think we're still about $16,000 away from reaching our goal. You can make your contribution online. Go to WMNF.org and make a contribution. Help us close that gap. Mike writes this, I hope the guy who called in to defend Saudi Arabia will recall that 15 of the 19 hijackers on 9/11 were from Saudi Arabia. None were from Iraq. Seriously, when Turkey is calling you out for human rights violations, that's not good. Mike says, keep up the good work. Thanks a lot, Mike, for your contribution to this show. I think it's important to look at all the things that Saudi Arabia does. It has the guardianship program. It treats women as second-class citizens. There isn't free speech in Saudi Arabia. If you're a guest worker, you have no rights. You have no human rights. And Saudi Arabia doesn't do a lot of the work, the construction work or the domestic work of its own. It hires guest workers. from other countries who have no rights. There's no union or anything like that, and there's no Department of Labor to protect guest worker rights. So I think we've got to take that into account as we view our very close relationship with Saudi Arabia and President Trump's very close relationship with Saudi Arabia. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up next in the next hour, hosting the Midpoint program. Thanks, everybody, that made a contribution to WMNF during the fund drive.